Right now, it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. It's time. Cynthia Hotswinter is waiting on the line to join us from the offices of the Journal. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. And it's just me today, so I apologize in advance if I make any factual errors, because Janet's usually here to catch me, but I'll do my best.
What well, does she do? Send you a little ping?
If any factual errors are made, we could always correct them.
Marshall.
I'm good at correcting my factual errors.
Marshall will do that.
That's right.
I personally will stay out of it.
All right.
Having been
Well, let's go on to the front page of the paper and the top story. You have a big generator on generators. Maintenance caution are the key. Once again, like these lifetime events when we had that October snowstorm and generators were installed all over the place, once again, generators are again being installed all over the place. But your story really points out, have a professional, do it the right way.
It's very dangerous. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, including the power backfeeding into the power lines and potentially shocking the power company workers. But also, you know, a friend of mine actually sadly died because somebody had installed his generator inside the house, and so you definitely want it away from the house. And a lot of people just didn't know after the storm what basic maintenance they needed. They didn't know that they needed fuel, so you should definitely have your generator serviced once a year. Make sure it's filled up. The reports I'm getting are that it's probably going to be a pretty bad winter. And if you've bought a generator, I was at Home Depot and Lowe's yesterday, and they both had signs saying, you cannot return your generator. We're happy to service it for you, but you can't return it. So if you've got one, make sure it's ready for what could potentially be an early and a bad winter. But great article by Deb Alexinas talking to Rich Crane, a nice local guy. Great business up in North Canaan, really sort of the big daddy of the local outdoor equipment company.
You know, what's interesting about the article, and if you're going to get a generator, you can go through a dealer like Richie Crane. You can go through your electrician in your town, and they will then go through either a local person. They'll do the dealing for you. They'll install it, and then you just hire them on a yearly basis to come and keep your generator. I mean, we have generators here at the radio station and all our transmitter sites. They're checked every year, and not only just for oil and everything, but the they're all muffled, so you have to check their filters and everything like that.
And I went to generator school, see, and the main thing that people don't realize is that when your generator is installed and set up, it is going to test itself once a week, and it needs to do that. And the number of people who manage to call their electrician back and deactivate it or because it's disturbing, and the point is, that test means that it's going to work when you need it to work.
Right.
And there's a little few misconceptions.
And the prices in the past 10 years for generators have come down. And the installation costs are much easier now than they used to be. So more and more people are doing it. And you're right, Janet. When you have a generator that's installed inside your house, even if it's muffled, you need fresh air source down where that generator is because not all of the gases go out through the muffler. It's impossible for that to happen.
Do people put generators in their basements?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Not vented?
Well, it's like we here at the radio station, we have ours, a huge generator. It not only has a muffler, but there's a fresh air vent that was put in that room for that exact purpose.
Right. So anyway, this is more do this in cahoots with a professional.
Or if your person you're going to buy it from, like Richie, is going to install it, do it as long as you have somebody do it the right way, and then you keep it updated, you'll be a very happy person.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a great timely article because you're right. Pat Pagano has told us we're going to have a very active winter, and he even sees one super snowstorm in our winter already. So.
Yeah.
So it's going to be that type of winter.
Oh, something to look forward to.
Yeah.
But don't wait because, as we found during the storm, the electricians are required to be out at households as power is being turned back on because the power company turns the power on up to a certain point, but then somebody has to turn the power on back to the house. So the electricians are extra, extra busy after a big storm like that with a big power outage. So, think about it now.
Yep. All right. So you've got a story right next to that, Cynthia. It was a smooth primary voting day, and of course, it wasn't that many people that turned out, but at least people did turn out.
And a large percentage, I mean, it was very interesting. If you look at the chart, which we have online at our website, truckcornernews.com, and, I guess if people really want to see it and they can't get online, let me know and I'll try to email it to you. We didn't really have space to put it in the paper. But it's very interesting statistically to look at the percentage of absentee ballots, which is very high for this election, and also the number of Democrats voting absentee versus the number of Republicans voting absentee, and then a very large number of people who took the time to vote and say they're uncommitted. I thought that was very interesting.
All right. I'll go right below that. Hunter Lyle honored with the Esterbrook Award, and if you're gonna get an award, that is a nice award to get.
The best award, of course, was when Bob Esterbrook was still alive. He was our owner for many years, and then sold the paper, and then put together an ownership group, came back, and that's the group that owns us now. And he was the most lovely guy, and a really experienced, foreign correspondent, Washington Post. Editorial page editor, and really did it old school. And we would always let our interns have a meeting with him, and he was just the most charming, lovely guy. So that was the real award. And all we have now that he's passed away is his memory and this nice award that the Rotary Club put together for our interns. Bob was a very active Rotarian. And we give it every summer to the intern who is, we feel, puts the most energy into the lessons that we're teaching them and the work that we're doing with them. And this summer, even though he really was only an intern for about 2 days, Hunter Lyle, who is from Sharon, whose sister Caitlin is a Millerton news reporter, has been doing a fantastic job and really very quickly got used to writing in his own voice for our newspaper, which is exactly what we want. So congratulations to Hunter.
All right. And one of the stories that I find interesting is to show you how farming in a local area, running a farm store and farming, how unbelievably exciting and harrowing it can be. You've got a picture of Sarah Kuhn. Of course, at Paley's, not only did they have drier weather this year, not only did they have a tornado, but also bears and everything affecting the growth of the summer corn and other things.
We've been hearing this for years, that the bears will come in and they'll roll on top of the stalks of corn. It's just, which is funny, but if they come, it's like if you have three bears and they come every day, that gets to be a lot of corn. And so Bruce Howden, who's I think in his late 70s up in Sheffield or Ashley Falls, Massachusetts, just really said, I hope they expand the bear hunting season up here in Massachusetts. And of course, we don't have one here in Connecticut, but I'm sure that a lot of farmers secretly support that. But then you've got the birds and you've got the raccoons who come and they individually pick, one ear of corn and they take one bite out of it and then throw it away and leave piles of it for the farmers. It's challenging. I guess all of us, whether you're a large-scale farmer or a small-scale farmer at this time of year, are thinking about, how much can you share with the animals before they're getting more than you're able to sell. But so the sweet corn report is a big deal for us every summer. Everybody wants to know, not only from an agricultural point of view, but from a culinary point of view, how's the corn doing? Everybody has their favorite farm stand. As you said, Sarah Kuhn, who is a Paley, had purchased the farm from her brother Charlie, the founder of the farm, last year, and she and her husband Chris have been running it and doing a phenomenal job. Charlie is still there off and on. And of course, Sarah has worked with Charlie since she was a youngster and is very familiar with the farm. They have really fantastic corn. We have Teresa Freund, one of the great, farm producers around here, Freund's Farm in East Canaan, and Bruce Howden up in Ashley Falls. Find out where to buy their corn and what kind of corn they're getting, but also don't forget the tomatoes.
Yeah, and Daisy Hill over in Ville. I mean, we have lots of local farmers, but I guess what this article points out is what the farmers face in our area is an absolute so many different obstacles to do what they do because they love to do it and they provide food to our local area. So people should understand what they actually go through to try to get that product out to you.
Especially as climate is changing and it's harder and harder to count on a steady flow of water.
Yep. All right. This is an interesting story about social unease triggers a rise in gun ownership.
We actually held this article for a few weeks because so much has been happening. This summer has been so crazy. But Deb Alexinas wrote a great article where we had heard anecdotally that there was a rise in people requesting gun permits. And I don't think it's because all those unruly people are coming up from New York. I think there's some kind of a deeper issue that's going on here. So she tries to get at some of the reasons, but really primarily looks at, what it means statistically, which towns are seeing the biggest rise, and what it means for gun store owners.
All right, as we turn the pages and go inside, something that we have been following here, it started really in North County, Massachusetts, went down to South County, Massachusetts, and now is here in full in Northwest Connecticut and Litchfield County, and that are people going and not only stealing cars, but if they can't steal the cars, stealing things that are in cars.
And we had a really, the state police did a great press release back in July that we ran almost in its entirety. And we ran it again just because my neighbor, Bob Riva, from the Lindells, the Riva family, had a security device on the outside of his building. And he posted on that app called Next Door Neighbor, which is becoming increasingly useful, a little video of this guy. And he just walked from house to house and very casually walked up to Bob's house. There were five cars parked around the house. The lights went on, and it didn't faze this young man at all. He just calmly got in the cars, went through every single, you know, the glove compartment, the sunglasses compartment, didn't take the cars. And Charmaine Riva, Bob's wife, had talked to Chris Terrell, our resident state trooper, and he said, well, you know, they're looking for like Audis and BMWs. And a lot of people here do feel like, well, we're in the country and it's very safe. They leave their cars unlocked. They leave their wallets in the car. They leave the keys in the car. And don't forget, if your keys are in the car and your car is stolen, you do not get insurance on it. So definitely lock your doors, keep your wallet in the house. There are a lot of people who are parking on the street. They're going to very quickly do a run through. And this time it was my neighborhood, but next time it's going to be, you know, could be any town in the area.
All right, and Patrick Sullivan and Lila Honkin have a very big story on the failure to communicate in the aftermath of our tropical storm.
So a lot of people have said to me, and we have some letters in the letters page this week, in the aftermath of Isaias, and I have to say, I'm a big supporter of Eversource. I feel like they generally do a very good job. I realize that our electric rates are among the highest in the country. We're doing an editorial on it next week. But Eversource has been problematic in this storm. First of all, because they announced a rate hike the day before the storm. And then it not only took a much longer time for Connecticut to get its power back compared to the states surrounding it, including Massachusetts, which is also powered by Eversource. But what you'll see in this article is the selectmen from each of the towns, and I would say generally Eversource communicates pretty well. The selectmen in our town said there is a complete failure for them to report in. It was impossible for the selectmen to find out what was going on. And often Eversource was reporting incorrect information, and that is problematic. I mean, I think everybody can be okay in a difficult situation if they have a pretty good sense of like how long it's going to last and what's happening. And that was that did not happen this time. And also, I think everybody's seeing these Eversource towers all over the area that have been getting these fiber optic lines upgrading them. And so I think it started last year. They had helicopters coming in. They've got these big wood planks going up to all the towers. The fiber optic lines are supposed to make it easier for them to figure out where the power outages are. And I would say the first 4 days of this storm, Eversource just kept saying, we're trying to figure out where the power outages are. And it makes you wonder if ratepayers are paying for these upgrades, why it was so completely useless in this storm.
And I guess what made it even worse for Eversource, and I know 2 times in 10 or 11 years doesn't sound like a lot, but when you had a major, major disaster, like I think it was CLNP back then, with that October snowstorm, and a whole bunch of rules and regulations were put into effect about how towns would have certain lead things when power was out drastically, none of that was followed. And I think that on top of the ask for rate request, and then once again to have another 7 or 8 day power outage, just, you know, broke the top for everybody.
Right. And, of course, from Eversource's point of view, there's a lot of challenges to them. There's a lot of trees here, and they do a lot of tree trimming. But when a tree comes up from its root and takes down a giant line, that's really hard, not only because it takes down the line, it makes the road impassable, but it's hard to chop up a whole oak tree. But on the other hand, they were supposed to have done a lot more tree trimming than they actually did this year. So Maria Horn has sent out an email, I think yesterday, about a legislative group that's looking into some of these challenges and really lays out what Eversource was supposed to have done, what they were supposed to spend the last 10 years preparing for, and what they did not do. So while we are sympathetic for Eversource, there were a lot of problems. There were a lot of things they should have done. And if they're going to charge the highest rates almost in the country, they needed to do better.
You know, it's funny. And if you ever talked to when they were off duty to any of the power guys that were in from other sections of the country, they're all very surprised at how antiquated our power grid system is here in Northwest Connecticut. It's almost to a person. They're just amazed how antiquated it is. But hey, you know, we got through it. You prepare for the worst and hope for the best and things like that.
Right.
A story which we talked a little bit about last week, Toymakers Cafe. They're going to take a break, hopefully just a temporary one. But you can only do so much when you're an aging couple and you have a business that's very successful and you lose your ability to make money.
Yeah, and they're a funny business in the sense that they've really only been open for three or four days a week,
yeah.
But they're really a destination for people. And I'm happy to say on Thursdays they always did a read aloud of the Lakeville Journal, which is so sweet. But it was nice to go in there because it was really like going to your mom and dad's house and they would make a sandwich for you that was so delicious and so completely made with love. A great menu. And so they've been at it a long time. The restaurant business is really, really hard. And they're not professional restaurant people, for better or for worse. They did a nice little, you know, chunk of what they could do when they opened that place, did it really, really well, are taking a break. And their thinking is we can't socially distance once autumn comes and we have to have people indoors. And it doesn't look like we can actually make enough money to pay our overhead. I suspect something will happen, though.
Yep. On the obituary page, a couple of obituaries, of course, that affect Sharon and the surrounding towns. But Ed Pitcher Sr., first of all, passed away at the age of 88. But the fish truck owner, which is always parked in Sharon, passed away. And this is just a heartwarming story because they're going to continue on. But it's not like having somebody.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody who has been doing it for the past 20 years. Somebody who's going to take over and for the same company has got to learn once again all about the area. It really is that fish truck is an amazing business.
And J.J. Herman, who died not quite of a heart attack, but of a number of complications from some health issues that he had, was such a beloved guy. He was very funny. He was not. Wasn't doing shtick, but he just was one of those guys that you'd have a nice conversation with as he was very quickly putting together your large order. And people are very devoted to it. And, of course, Sharon Farm Market across the street has great fish, too, but they don't have JJ. So people have been pitching in. Mike Amerigi, who is the brother of Sharon Town clerk Linda Amerigi, was there when I was there on Saturday. Long line. But I spoke to Carol Herman, JJ's widow. She's been running the business with him for all these years. He had a really interesting life. You should definitely read this article about, you know, the extraordinary people who do small businesses here. But she said, you know, we're trying to figure out the ordering right now, so we're selling out really fast. If you know what you want, you should call them. They want you to call them. Special orders call by Tuesday, but the better you can be at communicating to them, like, I'd love to get some salmon, I'd love to get some shrimp or whatever, it'll help them with the ordering. And just have a little patience right now. There's a little article underneath it, which I hope everybody looks at. There's a World War II ship. It was a destroyer called the USS Slater, and they're floating it up the Hudson River to Albany after some repairs were done. It's going to be open to the public, but you don't really see a lot of these massive warships on afloat and in motion. So it's going to be passing through the area on tomorrow. There's a links in this article on where you can check in to figure out more or less where it's going to be, and if you can get down to the river, you can see it passing by, which I think is going to be thrilling.
All right. I want to go on to the viewpoint and opinion page. Lots of letters to the editor dealing from the Postal Service to Maria Horn to the Tropical Storm to Eversource to, of course, Falls Village, what's going on with the affordable housing there. So
yeah, a lot of diversity in the letters and really touching on all of the topics that are the most important to us, the ongoing conversation about the proposed affordable housing site in Falls Village, which, of course, was one of the two places that got smacked so hard by that tornado a few weeks ago. But then also the Kent affordable housing people are weighing in. So it's turned into a very interesting multi-town conversation. I'm waiting for people to start sending letters in from Salisbury. So that's interesting. We have people already getting ready for the November election and really talking about Maria Horn, what a great job she's been doing. And I'd say she really distinguished herself beautifully during the power outage. It was just everywhere and was doing really great constituent service, which was wonderful to see. And then, thanks to the town clerks, talking about the absentee ballot voting, which again went very smoothly, unexpectedly, and Bob Whelan and Jenna Groff, my neighbor, talking about the upcoming election and Trump, and then our editorial, which is written by Whitney Joseph, the editor of our Millington News, talking about our Millington News office. I think this is happening all over the world right now, is people are realizing that remote actually works pretty well and wondering why they've been paying real estate rental fees for all these years. So we've closed down our militant office. It was a nice place where people could pop in and visit. We had the very friendly Betty Abrams there as the office manager. Betty is, I think, was maybe ready to retire anyway. She'd done that job very well for a very long time. But we will miss her. And Whitney Joseph will be working from home. Caitlin Hanlon, our reporter, will continue to be everywhere. It's incredible how much work she gets done. And Carol Nealand, Judith O'Hara-Balfe, our great writers, will continue to do their good work for the Militant News, but without the mothership office.
All right. And we have about 2 minutes left. And you actually have actually for the times we're in, have a pretty full compass.
It's a pretty full compass. And we have, the anniversary of women's suffrage was this week. And we've got exhibits. It was funny to me, a lot of the exhibits on women's suffrage in New York and Massachusetts happened last year, which is great because people could see them. So, of course, many of the exhibits this year, much harder to get to. But Sharon Historical Society, Cornwall Historical Society, Norman Rockwell Museum all have events. And we have a listing of other places you can go for information and to see things online. The Bardavon is doing a nice tribute to Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited and having really interesting musicians redoing some of the songs. So I hope there's an album from that on Spotify, which I would love to read. Roxana Robinson, who's a local from Cornwall but a nationally known author, reviewed all the time in the New York Times. She's been so great in Cornwall during this this COVID and has done a lot of programs online, very generous with her time. And Honor Moore, again, another well-known authoress from originally of Kent, and they're going to be doing a chat together about their two new books as part of the Kent Memorial Library, Cornwall Library, and House of Books. Information on that in the article. Ed Kirby, the beloved historian from Sharon, is going to be doing a talk on September 11th with the Sharon Historical Society and the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. Information there on how to zoom in. He'll talk about the iron industry, but Ed knows a lot about a lot of things, and he grew up here. And if you ever get the opportunity to go driving around with him, there is nothing more fun as he explains the landscape here and how it's changed. The Simon's Rock, which is part of Bard College, which is the college for high school students and young college students up in Simon's Rock, is doing a rock and roll documentary weekend with the Mahaley Theater. Martin Scorsese, Aretha Franklin, what's not to like, the Rolling Stones. And then really interesting people, Barrington Stage is doing a reading with Santino Fontana, who, if you don't remember, he was the star of this really well-received version of Tootsie, the beloved movie. It was on Broadway. Michael McKean, beloved from all of the Chris Guest documentaries, including This is Spinal Tap and
And George Costanza as well.
George Costanza, Jason Alexander. So they're doing a reading of a play called Judgment Day. So a lot coming up, and of course we have classified ads, lots of interesting little weird jobs, and tag sales.
All right, and just a reminder, speaking about women's suffrage, this weekend up in Sheffield, the Mumbet Walk for the first American slave that sued for her freedom. That is going on this weekend as well. So
great.
All angles of women's suffrage covered.
Right.
And it's nice to have an African-American Jamaican woman running for vice president at this time.
Yeah, very interesting. What an interesting week for the convention. Who knew that this was going to be the coolest convention? Maybe they'll do the Academy Awards by Zoom next year.
Right. Cynthia, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Cynthia Hoswinder, that is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. You can find them at tricornernews.com. That is tricornernews.com on the web.